Angie Swenson is the Hebrew Language Coordinator at the Sheffa School. She pioneered the Sheffa School's multi-sensory Hebrew reading program and continues to identify best practices in teaching Hebrew to students with language-based learning disabilities. Currently, Angelina teaches small groups of students, builds curriculum, and coaches teachers on Hebrew literacy. Prior to joining Sheffa, Angelina was a classroom teacher at the Aaron School and served as a Hebrew language learning specialist at the Heschel School. Angie's been committed to finding best practices in teaching Hebrew to students with language-based learning disabilities and ensuring that each student feels confident with their Hebrew language skills. Angelina received her BA from Cornell and a master's degree in special ed from Hunter College. She is currently enrolled in a master's degree program in school leadership at Bank Street College. Okay, Angelina, I'm going to transfer the controls over to you. And the floor is yours.
Thank you so much, Sarah. Hi, everyone. Bruchim Abaim. I'm excited to be with you all this evening and discuss Kriya-based strategies to better support your own teaching practices and student learning. This evening, we're going to go over the interplay between cognition and language. We're going to also discuss second language or foreign language learning and supports for language-based learning disabilities populations. We're going to learn about Kriya strategies for teaching and supporting students with language-based learning disabilities in Hebrew. And then lastly, we're also going to share a few helpful Hebrew resources that you can use and take away at your school. So I wanted to give you a little bit of the backdrop of language-based learning disabilities and how we think about them in the framework of the population that we're serving. Language-based learning disabilities is defined as a spectrum of difficulties related to the understanding and using spoken and written language. And examples of that include nonverbal learning disabilities, dyslexia and dysgraphia. Language-based learning disabilities are a common cause of academic struggles because of weak language skills impede on comprehension and communication, which are necessary in most academic skills. And then we're going to talk about how language-based learning disabilities in students' primary language really affect their foreign language learning and exposure and success of them internalizing the foreign language that they're exposed to, which in this case is going to be Hebrew. So in front of you, you see the cognitive linguistic model that was coined by Bloom and Leahy in 1978. And this is a typical language paradigm, how language therapists, psychologists, and educators conceptualize language. And I want to make the distinction very clear here. This is talking about language that is being the primary language of the learner or the native language of the individual. And as you can see here, there are three overlapping domains. In the middle domain is the one that represents the successful integration of all three domains. And the three domains are form, content, and use. Form is essentially the sound system and the grammar part of the language that is comprised of phonology, morphology, grammar, and syntax. Content are all the words that you know and what you know about them. So that relates to concepts, world knowledge, vocabulary, and lexical knowledge. And then the last one is use, which is the pragmatic or the social realm of the language. So as you can see, social communication, narrative language, and verbal reasoning, and some of you may also know this as social skills. And any language vulnerability can stem from one or a combination of difficulties in acquiring understanding in any one of these domains. And then one framework of language does not exclude other cognitive processes in students, meaning it does not necessarily impact attention, perception, memory, learning, and higher reasoning in students. So when we talk about language, we really, or foreign language, now we're transitioning to that thought, we really are thinking about the building blocks of language, and it is focused on the rules that govern the language that we use on a daily basis. And researchers have found that within linguistic components of language acquisition, phonology, syntax, semantic, and morphology were found to be particularly problematic areas for any foreign language learners. Research has also shown that students who face difficulties acquiring reading and writing skills in their native language often face challenges when acquiring another language. So when we think about this model in combination with our student or in relation to our students, we always think about, well, if their English language skills are exposed to such vulnerabilities due to this cognitive linguistic model, we will see those compounding effects when we expose them to the Hebrew language. So here you see how all of the compounds of the cognitive linguistic model make themselves up in the first language learning piece. And then if there are deficits in that first language learning, it is also going to impact any second or foreign language acquisition in a student. And foreign language focuses on language as content, and if there are vulnerabilities in the primary language, there are going to be compounding effects in the exposure of the foreign language, because we're focusing on really the form use of the language. And disability in the first language will impact all three domains of additional language learning. And we really have to think about English is like a foreign language to many of our kids who have language-based learning disabilities. So we have to be very, very careful and sensitive to how we expose them to foreign language, and particularly with respect to Hebrew language, and being very much aware of the difficulties in their primary language and what are the preventative measures that we're going to take in order to give them access, appropriate access, to acquire different skills in the Hebrew language. We can all agree that Hebrew is really the core language in Jewish institutions in the United States, in various communities certainly. Hebrew is an important language in marking milestones in one's life, including bar and bat mitzvot, and certainly it is the language of Israel and provides that connection for us in America to Israel via the Hebrew language. And for our practice, it's important to also understand where really Hebrew language falls under and how we really view it in the United States. And here we can see it in three different ways of how Hebrew can present itself in various contexts. So the first example is Hebrew as a second language, and this is considered as Israeli kids coming to the United States to learn English, and English is considered the L2, so it is the immersive language that is not just present in school, but it's also present in their immediate environment. And then Hebrew is also considered as a heritage language, and heritage language is defined as any language that is brought to a host society by immigrants, and can also be referred to as community language, ancestral language, or ethnic language. And then the last piece of Hebrew, the last category of Hebrew of how we view it, is viewed as a foreign language, which is typically how we expose our students in our institutions. So an example of that includes Hebrew class being taught in an American university, or Hebrew class that is being taught in a Jewish day school or a Hebrew school. So Hebrew here falls into the category of foreign language. But sometimes we see all of these three different contexts sort of mix in, depending on the populations that we're working with and the communities that we find ourselves in. And in the United States, Hebrew learning really falls somewhere across all three of these second or foreign language. So if we think about Hebrew in the academic setting, we typically really want to understand the child as a whole, not just to look at them separately as a Hebrew language learner, but we want to also look at them as a whole learner. How are they in English? What are their challenges in the English language? What are their challenges with reading? What are their challenges with writing? What are their challenges with math? Because those challenges are really going to dictate how and when they might be prepared or perhaps not be prepared to acquire a foreign language. And we have to be very honest with ourselves in providing those opportunities when it is appropriate for the students. So we also want to look into their other types of needs that they may have before thinking if it's appropriate to expose them to a foreign language. In this case, it's going to be Hebrew. We also have to look at their OT demands, their language needs, their sensory needs, their psychological needs as well. All of that was really, really important before we roll out and consider exposing them to another language, because we want to make sure that our students are connected to the Hebrew language as opposed to shying away from it and pushing themselves away from the language. We want to make sure that they're coming closer to it and they're proud to learn Hebrew because it is a part of who they are. It's important for their families. It's a part of their Jewish identity. And we want to bolster that support as opposed to push it down with the kids. So we want to give them opportunities for success. If a child is indeed ready to be exposed to a foreign language in the United States, there's a lot of research that does support that children with language-based learning disabilities can still learn a foreign language, but in the right and appropriate environments for them. That means small group instruction, repetitive instruction. It is sequenced and it is explicit and repetitive. And before we determine where or what curriculum they're going to be doing, I think it's important for us to assess our students with the various needs and then figure out what area of struggle we need to target for them and address first and foremost. And then based on that isolated area of struggle, we need to provide the necessary supports and accommodation that are specific for that student, not according to the school's curriculum. I think it's also very important to note the distinction of remediation versus modification. Remediation in this case is going to be giving them an alternative curriculum that will support their isolated area of struggle. And then modifications are really the supports and the scaffolds that are used with that student that match the classroom's or the school's curriculum. So those are two different things. At the Sheffa School, we track our kids once they're able to learn a foreign language or be exposed to a foreign language. We put them in three different tracks. And it really starts with track one, where they learn Kriya only, Kriya-based strategies. They work on Kriya, and they are exposed to simple sentences, some vocabulary, shoshim, and we really figure that out by figure out where they land in terms of their Kriya development by first and foremost assessing them and determining their Hebrew decoding level. If you're all familiar with the QRI, the Qualitative Reading Manual, it is typically an assessment that targets kids based on their level of need and isolates their area of struggle. And then from that, you are able to support and remediate those needs based on where they fall on that spectrum. And it is really, it really categorizes them in the independent level, which is the most fluent level and the easiest level for them, the instructional level, which is really like the area that you want the students to be in as a marker for you to know where to start them off as, and then their frustration level, the level of too much difficulty. It is not where they are. They're probably not going to get there at this point in their academic career. So you really want to focus on that instructional level and target their needs based on where they fall on the result of the assessment that you would give them. A very popular assessment that I've used before, and this is published by Berman House, it is called Hebrew Reading Assessment, Decoding, and Fluency, and it has great tools that goes all the way from letter recognition to word recognition to then modern Hebrew Kriya and also biblical level Kriya, which is another skill that students typically learn in many of our Jewish days. So in understanding how we begin exposing our students to various teaching opportunities of the Hebrew language, assuming that students need to really start with the Aleph Bet, we begin with very explicit, structured, and sequenced instruction of letter learning. And as you can see here, this is a part of a visual chart that we've created at Shefa that associates the letter shape and sound of it to an English word. It is quite uncommon to hear that, you know, you would teach Hebrew in English because typically it's a bleep-bleep sort of curriculum. But if students who have language-based learning disabilities consider English as their foreign language, it's going to be that much further removed for them in Hebrew if Hebrew is going to be taught in bleep-bleep. So everything has to be explicit to the point of using English language in supporting their Hebrew linguistic development. The chart really shows here associations of the letters that are visual and they're also auditory. So what do I mean by that? So if we look at the Aleph, Aleph without any vowels, it is silent, as we all know. It kind of looks like the letter X. Letter X doesn't represent any sounds. Then we go to the Bet. The Bet has a picture of a belly button and a back. And if you look at the Bet letter itself, the Bet has a belly button as well as it has a back sticking behind it. The associated visual words are English as opposed to Hebrew. A lot of schools typically expose students to bed bite. Students cannot remember the word bite, so they will oftentimes forget the sound bet. That is why it's that much more important to rely on the base of English, something that is more familiar to them, that will support their memory and repetition of the Hebrew letters with something that is associated to the English language. Then we go on to Gimel. Gimel, if you look on the bottom, Gimel has a gap between the sound. The beginning sound of the word gap is go, and Gimel has that same sound, go. And then the next word is Dalit. Dalit looks like a diving board. As you see, the top of it is a diving board, and students can remember that association as well. Research has also shown that it's not only important to teach them the letter sounds in this case, but it's also important for them to learn the letter names. So not skipping over Bet, Gimel, and Dalet, because the words Bet, Gimel, and Dalet already begin the building blocks of the English language and support their phonemic awareness development. And this is actually also tied to form, which is something that I had mentioned before when talking about the cognitive linguistic model. So when they're exposed to words like Aleph, Bet, Gimel, Dalet, they're already starting to develop their form, and then it's the sound system and grammar part of the language, which will then later on connect to, it will connect to their future Hebrew literacy development. Dyslexic learners typically have a problem with directionality, phonemic awareness, and sound symbol connections. And to create that, we provide them with opportunities that are based on their English language skills, which is something familiar to them. And what's important about this letter exposure is that it is sequenced, it's structured, it's consistent, and repetitive. If we expose students to all the letters in one shot, most of the time, our atypical learners will not be able to come back and recall those letter sounds or letter names the next day. That's why it's important to make sure that it is cut up and provided directly how the student can best learn it. It might be one letter per week, and that may happen. It could be two letters per week, or it can be enough of like three letters or four letters per week, which is considered to be quite advanced. And obviously, this grows in complexity the more letters you add on. So again, you want to stay consistent, you want to stay repetitive, and you must stay structured when you are rolling out and typically exposing the kids to the Aleph Bet.
Angie, can I just ask you, these images that you have here, is that something proprietary that Shefa created, or is this something you purchased that other people could purchase a set of?
So it is something that Shefa created internally, and there is a continued chart with the rest of the letters, including the Beget Kefet and the final letters. So it's all proprietary to Shefa. Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. And in continuing the strategies, and I'm sure many teachers do this because teachers are very, very creative and they're incredibly resourceful, and they do this beautifully, but multisensory learning is really the bread and butter of our practice in special education. Multisensory learning is the theory that individuals learn better if they're taught using more than one sense. These senses usually are employed in multisensory, the senses that are employed in multisensory learning are visual, auditory, kinesthetic, and tactile, and that is the acronym for that is ZACT. Here you see students learning the letters Vav and Zayin. Visually, they are very, very similar and quite confused by many students. So in order to kind of make the page, the reading list, come to life, students are building the shapes of the letters with pipe cleaners and building blocks, and I think dominoes is on the other side, and they're doing it as station learning. They're doing this as station learning where they spend a couple of minutes using different materials to kinesthetically and in a tactile manner build the shape of the letters. And then, of course, the teacher walks around and makes sure that they're creating the shape of the letter correctly and also reminding them that Hebrew letters go from right to left as opposed to left to right, which is a common mistake that or a common behavior that dyslexic students may display. And in the background, they're also having a Hebrew song go on that is all in Hebrew, so there's no English exposure there at all. That is a part of phonemic awareness and developing that phonemic awareness for the kids. It's important for them to hear the system of or the building blocks of the Hebrew language because it is quite different than English, and they don't always hear it consistently throughout their day. So in those Hebrew opportunities, it's important for the background music or the conversations between the teachers to really be as evoked as possible because it's an intentional exposure for the kids for the phonemic awareness and their development of that cognitive skill or that cognitive process. And some other examples of multisensory learning, of course, you see here pipe cleaners and blocks and dominoes. It can also be done through desk dictation. So if a kid has a dry erase marker and a small dry erase board, you can dictate for them the letter Zayin, Z, and expect for them to create the shape of that letter on that dry erase board. Because the students are a little bit older and they're not in the Aleph Bet phase, typically they're able to form the shape of the letter simply by copying it or remembering from their embedded memory from their previous exposure how that letter might look on the dry erase boards for them, and that's also supported in the multisensory learning. Of course, repetition, oral expression, and then auditory opportunities for Hebrew, which is what I talked about, which was the phonemic awareness and giving them that immersive Hebrew environment by the background noises and the background music or conversations that they hear in the Hebrew language. Are there any questions now that I can answer?
No, I think everyone's just trying to clamoring to figure out how they can get a hold of those Aleph Bet cards.
Oh, everybody wants to get a hold of the cards. Well, that's a bit of a
I'm joking. I know they're proprietary, but I think.
Yeah.
But no, otherwise, no questions so far. We're good.
Okay. Sounds good. In continuing with the multisensory learning, one of the techniques that we strongly employ at Shefa on the English reading end and also on the Hebrew reading end is skywriting. Skywriting is connected to muscle memory, and it is the reinforcement of letter, in this case, it's the reinforcement of letter and word shapes and sounds. So in English, if you look at the visual, it's not a video, it's an image from a video. If you look at the image on the left side, you see a teacher that is holding a red card pack. These students are standing up, they're holding out their entire hand, and they're holding out two fingers, and are going to create large motion movement of the consonants and vowels that the teacher is going to show them. So they stand up and with their entire hand, and that's muscle memory because it is connected to their brain, that's how they internalize and they're learning the letter sound and shape more concretely. They're spelling out with their entire arm, app, buh, and they're repeating it after the teacher. So while they're hearing it, they're saying it, and while saying it simultaneously, they're also skywriting the shape of the letter. In Hebrew, on the right image, you see the same. But we decided that it will be very, very important for the students to skywrite the letters that they have really hard times remembering. So letters like Vav and Zayin and Chet and Taf, we might put them in a card pack and require students to skywrite them with their entire hand doing large motion or gross motor movements, which is activating the muscle memory, and then saying the associated sound, and then also saying the associated English word that supports that letter memorization. And then here the student is actually, and then we took it a step further, we also combine prefixes to that because Hebrew literacy is also very, it's cumbersome in the sense that many of the conjunctions can also form themselves in prefixes. And it's important for the students to know that there's prefixes that have meaning that can also change the meaning of the word if there is a prefix like le or ha attached to the word. So here you see a student holding up the card pack of le. So she's saying le, and the kids are skywriting le and saying it at the same time. And then they're also saying the definition of it in English, meaning two or four. And then the student flips back the card pack, and then she goes, be. The students repeat, skywrite be, and then they go in, on, or with. So understanding the meaning of those prefixes is also very powerful for the kids because it also supports their comprehension later on as well. Vowels. Vowel faces, and the vowel system is Hebrew, as we all know, is vastly, vastly different than how it is in English. The vowels in English are comprised of the letters that students learn. It's a part of the word. They're all letters. They're consistent. But in Hebrew, as you know, it's a system of letters and vowels, and the vowels are really represented through a symbol system. And here, as you can see, these vowel faces have the shape of the vowel sound that's represented by their mouth. So that is a visual representation of what the student should do with their mouth. And then in addition to that, it also has a color associated to it. And the color is not in Hebrew, it is in English. Again, students need to use their background knowledge of something that is very familiar to them in order to make the necessary association for them to learn this system of essentially symbols. The color, this color that you see, the first one underneath, kamas, patach, hatach, patach, is not light blue, it's actually aqua, because these are all the sounds that make a, and we teach them the names of the sound, the names of the vowels, kamas, patach, hatach, patach, because again, it reinforces and further develops the Hebrew phonemic system, and the sound of the vowel is represented by the beginning vowel of the beginning vowel of the starting syllable of that word. And then if you look at chirik, you have chirik and chirik male. Again, you have the shape association of the mouth. And then it's also, the background color of it is green, because green has the vowel E in it, the double E, and students are better able to recall and remember that that E is related to that color green. And in a worksheet, they may color that E vowel, you know, 10 times with the color green before it really sinks in and they're able to make it more concrete in their memory. I'm getting a question here. If I can show you the rest of the vowels, please. Unfortunately, as much as I would love to do that, it is also proprietary to Shefa, and all of the other vowels also have color associations to them. So I encourage you all to also think about your ways of how you can integrate English language to support the Hebrew learning in your students. And you will see that a lot of the anxieties and a lot of the tension for our students will decrease if they use English as a crutch and if they use English in association with the letters, in association with the vowels, and then obviously as we build on words and how that gets to be more complex. Multisensory learning is obviously a big fan of technology. I think technology sometimes can be a little bit overused, and I think it's important to know when to use it and when to not use it. One of the more sequenced and explicit and multisensory apps that I found is called EYAL, E-Y-A-L. And you can download it on iPads for $20. And it begins with exposing kids to letters and then vowels in a very sequential manner. So if you're familiar with Kriya Medureget, which is the approach from Israel, how educators expose or teach kids in first grade or even kindergarten to the acquisition of vowels. So they first teach them the A vowels, then the Shva, then the E vowels, then the O vowels, which is the Cholam, and then the Tzeret Segol, and then the Shuruk Kubutz, which is the U vowel. And so, and in this app, they do exactly that, but they only keep it to letters and then words. And the words really follow that sequence pattern that I just mentioned with the vowels. And what you have here that's really cool in this app is that students, when they read a word, let's say, that has three vowels or three syllables, then you can divide it up. You can syllabicate it, which is tactile on the app itself. You can also record yourself reading the reading list here. And you can send it to teachers, you can send it to parents, that recording, so that it tracks the student progress and really monitors their work and looks into mistakes and gives opportunities to the students to correct themselves. And it really gets into the nitty-gritty of syllabication approaches in a very tactile and organized, sequenced, and friendly way for the child. So someone just said AL app has image on screen. That is correct. So that is a picture of a RAM, and that's what you're going to see when you are researching what the app looks like. And I strongly recommend that if you are struggling to find that program to put your kids on and what to do with them, it's a very good program that a kid can really, like a DIY, do-it-yourself Hebrew learning, Kriya, approaches that the kid can do, and you can monitor the kid's progress in that as well. So I'm a big fan of that. And then
Sorry, someone just wanted to know, is it the kind of thing that you think, if you wanted to recommend to a parent a little extra practice at home, is it something that a child could do independently at home?
Absolutely, yes. There's a lot of English on the app. All the directions are in English. It's user-friendly, it's easy, it's clean to use, so it's not like busy with frills and all Hebrew that you can't understand. So yes, it is something that you can use at home to give a child that little extra boost, definitely, for sure. And a lot of kids really, really enjoy this program as well. And then another website that's very popular that comes from Israel, which is the Matach website, which is Gamba. And I also included it in the helpful Hebrew resources. And it is another Kriya-based technology website that gives kids an opportunity to work on their phonological awareness, on their phonemic awareness, on their syllabication, vowel recognition, letter recognition, and so on. You can definitely visit it. So I think it's gamba.co.il, and I provided it also in my resources at the end. Multisensory learning also includes dictation. Dictation is, I think, perhaps is viewed as a more traditional approach to learning when you're thinking about Hebrew language and how to use it in connection to the reading rules that the students are learning. So with dictation, you essentially reinforce the sounds that you hear in words in written form. And a lot of the research has supported that if students hear the words or the symbols or the symbols or the syllables that are associated with those words and then write them down, it will actually support their reading accuracy as well. So they work hand in hand. So the way that students also learn reading strategies in English, they do so by dictation. So they may learn about the double vowel team of EA in an explicit manner, and then the teacher will dictate a list of words that will include the EA vowel team for the student to really synthesize and internalize. And until it's automatic, they won't move to another concept until that student is able to spell words correctly with the EA vowel team, and also is able to read words that are controlled with the EA vowel team. A lot of our reading program and what we do at CHEFA is all controlled reading lists. So if we're working on the silent schwa, for example, we're only going to expose them to words that have the silent schwa, which is the schwa nach. We're not going to include the prefixes, we're not going to include the schwa na, we're just going to include the silent schwa, because that is controlled for the students. They don't have to guess, they don't have to assume, and it is explicitly stated right there that this is what you're expected to do. So once they are taught, let's say, the silent schwa rule, and let's say they are taught the silent schwa rule and the non-silent schwa rule, we're going to dictate words based on that lesson. Here on the right side, you see a page from a machberet of a student, very dyslexic student, that was working on a mix of the schwa nach and the schwa na. I dictated words for her. I would say the word galgal. She repeated the word galgal, and then she wrote it down. If it was correct, I gave her a dot on top of the page, just like we do in English dictation as well. Now, if she made a mistake right after that first word, let's say she wrote the word galagal, I would read it out loud to her and I would say, you wrote galagal. I want you to write galgal. So the student would have to activate their metacognitive skills in thinking or remembering what was that concept that I was just taught, or what was that concept that I've learned for so many lessons up until this point, that I need to make that lamed, that first lamed, as l and not la. So teaching them in that very explicit, giving them opportunities for dictation after teaching them explicitly really reinforces their spelling, their handwriting, and of course their vowel recognition. And then you give them a reading list. And the reading list will be very similar to what you typically did with dictation. In this case, this reading list that you see on the left side is a little bit different than what you see on the dictation, because the left side really shows the schwa nach, the silent schwa. And the hope is that it will transfer from the dictation, from the handwritten work, to the reading and the expressive work that the student would have to prepare. And then, of course, in that controlled setting, everything connects to sentences after that. So then after they really work on the accuracy of reading words with, let's say, the ah, the kamatz, patach, hatach, patach, and the shva of all sorts of types, then they're going to move on to reading sentences with only the ah vowel and the shva vowel, and then they will move on to reading stories that are controlled as well with the ah vowel and the shva vowel as well. Are there any questions before I continue?
We're good. We're all clear.
Okay. And this is a very, very, I think, antiquated approach to learning how to read, but it is a very necessary approach to learning how to read because, again, it reinforces the writing and the reading in a multisensory, that tactile way of students really grasping the concepts that they're exposed to in that moment. You also see the same thing here with the shva. Shva is a particularly very challenging vowel We teach them in a very explicit manner, and we use English to roll out the rules for them. So as you see here, on the left side, you have the word dvash. We cross it out for them. So we typically say, we use the language of like cross out the shva when it's silent and then blend it with a letter in front. And we give them steps of what they need to do in order to read the word accurately. So step number one, find the vowels, cross out the shva, divide after the shva except for the last one, number the syllables, and read the word. And we'll see a more explicit example of that in a little bit. And then after they practice with the multisensory tools, then they move on to reading the word list. And if they need to, they can always use the strategy of crossing out that silent shva. And we would put it on a kid. We wouldn't read the word to them. We would say, what kind of strategy can you use here? What kind of support can you use here in order for you to figure out how to really decode the word? I see here a question, what happens when a child cannot write? So if they can't write and it's too early in their writing development, they can always use, and this is another strategy that we teach the kids, we always teach them to use their left index finger in covering up the word syllable by syllable. We teach them syllabication from a very, very early onset of when they're exposed to reading Hebrew words, particularly with the A vowel, and we teach them to cover up the word with their left finger, and then they read it syllable by syllable, and then they blend it all together as well. And I just mentioned about this, the syllabication piece. Again, the silent shva is pretty tricky, so syllabication is very, very important as the complexity of the Hebrew vowels increases. We always prompt them with reminders, with visual reminders, to identify certain vowels of the word. So here we have step number one, look for and cross out the silent shva, if there is any. And find the vowels that actually make a sound, because it's important, because the number of vowels will also correspond to the number of syllables. So if there are two auditory vowels, they're going to be two auditory syllables. Step three, divide after the vowel except for the last, and then number four, number the syllables, and then you read the word all together. And if you see on the bottom here, there's a reminder, if there is a silent shva in the middle, you divide after it and then move it back. So we teach the kids devices like middle, move back, so the association of the M is there for the kids. It's an important multisensory tool and it is also applicative and is also very common in the English language, particularly with students using their right index finger when they're reading English, because English goes from left to right, and they actually sometimes cover up the entire word and are able to read it syllable by syllable, and then they blend the entire word together based on the vowel consonant rules that are present in the English language. And then, obviously, with respect to teaching students explicit rules, I think it's one of the most important things in our work with language-based learning disabilities communities. The explicit rules must be in English, and it is okay for the students to receive the English exposure while also developing their Ivrit language learning as well, particularly when it comes to reading. And as you can see, as the concepts become more nuanced, it is that much more appropriate, it's that much more important to keep it very explicit, very crisp, not busy on the eye, and giving them as many visuals for support. Here's an example of when there are exceptions to the silent shva, because we teach the shva is silent, but we also teach that there are exceptions, or that it makes a short S sound, which is what the kids know from English, and when that applies to Hebrew as well. So they are clear when they see words with those combinations of letters and a shva in the beginning, they know automatically that that makes an S sound as opposed to a silent sound. And this is another strategy that students can use. You see here a lot of English and some supported Hebrew. Sometimes I would even mix the Hebrew altogether if this is a communication piece to the child or to the parent. So if you need to work on accuracy, here are the steps that you need to do. And there's on the bottom a visual example of how those words could be syllabicated and then blended together. And then if you need to work on fluency, these are the things that you need to do in order to exercise that fluency muscle and getting yourself used to reading it with faster pace and reading it with appropriate prosody. Again, it's all about repetition. So besides being explicit and being very clear, the child has to really practice it over and over and over again in a very meaningful and repetitive manner, where they are hearing themselves and are building upon the building blocks of reading development. And obviously that is done with support of the teacher, with explicit lessons, with homework and repetitive instruction that is working on the same piece, lesson after lesson after lesson. And then here, there's some more Hebrew reading resources that support reading development in students. So like I said, there is the Gamba website, which is the free website from Israel for beginning Hebrew readers. And then there's another phonemic awareness website that is from Ofek as well, which is from the Mafteach HaKesem reading series, and that's also from Israel. And then there's also a Lomda, a letter learning website, and you need a PC for that as well. And this only targets the development of letter learning and develops phonemic awareness, so it provides sound opportunities for you to hear some of the letter sounds. And then the last one is, which is what I showed you a little bit earlier, is the Eyal app, which is really a DIY Hebrew reading program. And it is all, it is auditory, it is visual, and provides a lot of tactile opportunities for students to really strengthen their Kriya related skills. And the last thing I wanted to say is, you know, for all of us that doubt whether our students can learn Hebrew and how much more of that struggle they can take, I want to reassure you that students can and will be able to learn aspects of a foreign language as long as that exposure is targeted, sequenced, consistent, and repetitive. And it is really on the teacher to be that monitor of their reading development and progress, and be that steward of learning for them to be confident and successful Hebrew learners for the rest of them.
Thank you so much, Angie. I can tell you, I don't know if you can see, but there are 150 Kriya educators on tonight who are so thankful and appreciative for your sharing your approach and your strategies. So thank you so much.